This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, the 30th of December. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Matholkar.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Jacqueline Froelich.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Katie Henriksen.
This is the last day of the week between the holidays, and today, like we've done the previous four, talking about some of our favorite stories from 2011. Ithi, you have your hand up.
Should we just let them know how we're, you know, determining how who should start and who comes after who?
Yes, because we wanted to divvy it up. We didn't want the same person introducing the show every time. So today it was by...
Who was born furthest from Fayetteville?
And right. As being born in India, you won.
Yes. And then yesterday it was...
By hair color?
Their darkest hair color.
Also won that one.
We won't
and
tell you which
shortest.
Days we've done by height, yes. We've done
age.
By age.
Age, and there was one more.
Beauty.
Oh, no, that's no. Second, that second letter of your
right.
First name.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Well, we
yes.
Had a fun week.
We
it's
have.
Been interesting.
Yesterday the show ended when we were talking about our favorite things about working here. Mm-hmm. And Antoinette, you said field trips.
I did.
And one of my favorite stories this year was a field trip.
Mm-hmm.
We went to
Sweden Creek.
Sweden Creek, which I think is in Newton County. Not Madison.
I think we were questioning which
maybe
county
it's Madison
we were
County because you go to Kingston, you go, keep going, so it may be Madison County. It's remote Arkansas.
You got lost?
Well, no, but it's in. There's a lot of dirt roads and things, and so
right.
I'm not quite sure where the lines are.
Right.
At that point,
it's gorgeous.
Oh yeah,
we went in the middle of summer.
Yes.
And Sweden Creek is where it's just mushrooms everywhere.
Yeah.
And so we had some fun times there. Except you saw, you did not see.
I didn't see it. There was a, apparently
snake.
A snake. There was this cave near one of the creeks and that they were going to show Kyle. And one of our guests told us that there might be snakes over here. So I was cautiously walking over because I was not smart and I wore a dress that day. And when they saw one, Kyle's like, let me see. And I said, nope. And I ran away.
The normally fearless Antoinette Grajeda just faded back.
I don't
into
do
the
snakes.
Foliage.
I don't
that
do
was
snakes.
A wise decision.
Thank you.
Here was our visit to Sweden Creek, and it was quite exciting. It takes a while to walk around the perimeter of Sweden Creek Farms. There, Carol Ann Rose and Curly Miller grow mushrooms, plenty of them, on their organic farm in remote Madison County. Those mushrooms grow on logs, rows and rows of logs.
We just fruit here in the summer. This group of logs here, you're not even looking at 5% of the logs that are on this place. Maybe not even that.
You've probably eaten some of their crop. They sell their shiitake mushrooms to restaurants and grocery stores in northwest Arkansas, but also to clients around the country. Every 2 weeks, more than a ton of mushrooms from Sweden Creek Farm are shipped out of Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport. The shiitakes are picked off the logs, the rows of logs, at different stages. Curly and Carol Ann call the largest ones barbecuers.
They're a large size, and then, like I said, some of them are smaller. We sort them separate for babies, and we sell them at Ozark Natural Foods. And also, at the Roots Festival, they're going to do a raw marinade that's going to have raw shiitakes and that have been marinated, and they're going to use babies for that.
Developing a successful mushroom farm isn't as easy as just taking shiitakes off a log. The crop grows under the bark, out of sight. Curly says a mushroom farmer has to make up stories about what he thinks is happening, then see if those stories are correct. Carol Ann and Curly say there are many potential complications. She says since the operation began in the 1980s, there's been plenty of trial and error. Sometimes expensive experiments in growing that provided education also hurt the bottom line. Weather, of course, can also be a factor, not just the usual concerns about extreme heat, cold, or drought that could stunt growth, but conditions developing half a continent away that can, and have, made the spawn of the mushroom emerge from log's bark too soon. 3 years ago, when the remnants of Hurricanes Gustav and Ike made it to the Ozarks, Sweden Creek Farm exploded with activity.
My best guess is 80,000 pounds in 2 days. The entire place blew.
Gustav's heavy rains and subsequent tropical conditions meant the mushroom spawn under the bark went on, as Curly describes it, a bender. Then, after Gustav, here came Ike.
Rained another 4 inches. The wind blew like crazy. It went down to like 42, and it shook. And another thing about shiitake is a branch can fall off a tree into a batch of bone-dry logs, and they'll fruit right where it hits them. From the shock of being jarred, yeah, they're really weird.
The back-to-back storms produced a year's worth of mushrooms almost overnight. Curly says the spore of the mushrooms could actually be seen floating up out of the hollow where the farm is located. Much of the impromptu crop was so large it couldn't be harvested. In the past 3 years, Curly and Carol Ann have figured out better ways to keep the shiitakes from fruiting too early. There is art, science, and a bit of intrigue involved in getting the right mushroom to grow in the right way. Over time, the methods at Sweden Creek have worked. And others, Carol Ann says, have noticed.
And there has been espionage where people have, you know, tried to sneak on our farm and, you know, steal.
County agents.
Yeah. Stealing spawn, trying to recreate this. This is proprietary, and we're sworn to protect it and not give it out. And, you know, people have tried to steal it.
And that's why an important, pivotal part of the process at Sweden Creek is kept secret.
So this is where the real action is. This we don't share with anybody. We'll bring people in here, but we don't let anybody take pictures. We don't let anybody here who's an aspiring grower. We don't even have people on our farm because it always ends bad.
And so what happens down a dirt road some distance past the Kingston Square remains pretty much unrevealed to almost everybody. With or without trade secrets, mushrooms are an enigmatic harvest. Logs used as hosts can serve as fertile homes for a few generations of mushrooms before the nutrients are consumed by the spawn. Expired logs look fresh, but they weigh as little as a plastic wiffle ball bat.
All the nutrients and stuff, and see, you gotta... The other thing you have to remember is that this has been out in the woods for like 4 or 5 years, and the bark's still tight. The shiitake holds the bark right on. It's amazing, isn't it?
It really is.
This log has a lot of heartwood, so it would be heavier, but it'll make better firewood, but it still doesn't weigh that much. So this is our firewood for the winter.
Tired logs used for heating is just one example of how Carol Ann and Curly are resourceful. Curly works on the engines of the vans used for transporting the bounty. He poured concrete for one of the water tanks used to submerge the logs to invoke the mushrooms to fruit. Carol Ann manages gardens year-round that produce everything from corn to okra. They harvest watercress from the 5 springs on their land. As Curly explains, independent farmers miles away from a town cannot afford to not be sustainable. But he's never lost his passion. His eyes still grow wide with fascination when he takes a safety pin to a log that has minuscule fungal activity happening just under the surface.
See, here's another button coming right behind it. There's one right there happening. But tomorrow they'll be... Oh, there's one right there. Tomorrow they'll all be pinned up. So they'll double, and then a whole bunch of them will pop the bark. And then in a couple of days, all those buttons will be emerged and... These will be picked out by probably about this time next week.
Curly and Carol Ann say the year-round care of the logs and the year-round physical moving of thousands of logs means the work is a combination of dairy farming and championship weightlifting. It's not an easy path for those mushrooms to get from the logs on this Madison County slice of land to the grocery store shelves or restaurant menu. But the farm seems ideal for the work. If you don't mind having to shoo a snake away once in a while.
Hey, get out of here.
Go on.
They got something.
There it is.
Come on,
get out of there. That looked cottonmouthish.
Yeah, it did.
The work at a mushroom farm like Sweden Creek is a mix of small labors and large. Like the big tractors that haul logs along a pathway into the woods so they can rest and grow mushrooms. But spend a day with Curly and Carol Ann, and you get the feeling that these two transplants, he's from Rochester, New York, she's from New Jersey, have found the world that they love.
Oh, and this is the first place where we started growing. We had a big garden there. Actually, this is a big garden. It's grown up. It'll get taken care of. But
well, that was sweet corn. We already harvested.
Yeah, we already harvested it. But we would be down here, you know, all summer picking mushrooms, stacking out logs, feeding kids watermelon in the, you know, in the fields, them playing and stuff, splashing in the creek, staying away from rattlers.
Our visit to Sweden Creek in remote Arkansas earlier this year in the summer of 2011, we had an entire show that was based in Newton County this year. And Jackie, you talked to some people who climb.
Went to Horseshoe Canyon, this really remote Ozark Mountain outback place where people camp and ride horses and climb the bluffs. And the proprietors have drilled metal bolts into the rock bluffs so people can clip onto those and climb up these really sheer rock walls. And I've been wanting to do a climbing story for a while, and I know about this couple, Chad Martin and his wife, Linda Parcher. They're married, and she goes by Linda Martin now, and they climb all over the place. And they let me tape them climbing and kind of instructing listeners on how it works, how it feels, what it sounds like, and it's real jangly and noisy and fun, and they're the sweetest couple. But they also tell the story of how he proposed to her while they were on the rock. And they ended up getting married, and it was so cool. No, I did not climb. I have climbed some. They do a 24-hour competition. It's a 24-hour climb. They climb for 24 hours straight. And everyone at this place at Horseshoe Canyon, and I don't know if we talk about it in the story, I don't remember, but everyone wears headlamps at night. So the place is like bobbing and illuminated by these headlamps as they climb the rocks. These climbers are crazy. Linda Martin talks to herself as she unloads a 50-pound backpack filled with climbing gear, harness, bundles of heavy rope, and carabiners, which clip things together. Beaners, for short, they're called. Her husband, Chad Martin, does the same.
Chad won the privilege of leading the first route.
That means Chad gets to climb up a crazy sheer cliff to the top. There he'll top rope or slide a belay or safety rope tied around his waist through a steel anchor bolted in at the top. Linda holds onto the end of the rope at the base of the bluff. The anchors on the rock face serve as pulley points.
Okay, right now I'm putting on my climbing harness. And what this does is we attach this to a belay device and the rope. And then the other person on the end is attached the same way.
Linda attaches a gree-gree to her belt through which the rope slides. Its clutch opens and closes onto the rope, providing drag when necessary to break a fall. Chad unpacks his knapsack of quick draws.
Rope runs through those on the way up.
Because in order to get safely to the top anchor, he must successively rope into lower bolted anchors beneath it, using the quick draws, which basically quick release. This is how sport climbing works. Climbers traverse routes that are fixed onto the rock face.
Let you focus on just climbing, and most of the protection's already done, as opposed to trad gear, which is this pile here.
Climbers that use trad gear or traditional gear use temporary nuts, hexes, and cams, which they carry with them as they climb. These are wedged into crevices, their anchors as well, and they're removed after the climbing expedition's done. Climbing jargon's complex, sounds kind of jangly, like the gear. In the olden days, climbers simply hammered in metal bolts wherever. That's considered too destructive now. Linda and Chad put on helmets last. Then finally, shoes, because most climbing shoes, they look kind of like sporty ballet slippers and are really tight.
Fit fairly tight, and snug in the foot, and very sticky rubber, special rubber on the bottom. Has good friction on the rock.
Many trad and sport climbers prefer painfully tight shoes to give them an edge and make them look really hot.
It's been a while. I've been off this winter from climbing very much. Always seems first climb jitters.
The couple tug at each other's gear, then kiss for good luck.
Looks good. On belay.
Belay's on.
Climbing.
Climb on.
Chad free climbs 15 feet to the first bolted anchor, to which he clips and slides through his rope.
And by the second clip, he's a lot safer. So this is the more critical part. You're good.
Linda praises Chad's ascent. He does look like a ballet dancer.
thoughtfully and slowly reaching toward the next hand and toe hold, hips close to the wall, using his legs to leverage himself up to the next anchor.
Good job.
Wind's dying down.
Good climbers rely on their core, their center of gravity, to stay balanced on the wall. Once Chad reaches the third bolt, the rock face eases with lots more handholds and footholds. We're several thousand feet high up on a hardwood forest ridge above Horseshoe Canyon, along the southwest rim of rock, which encrusts an entire elevation around the canyon. It's a top sport climbing destination with over 300 bolted routes. The Martins, who come here several times a month, are in fantastic shape. To stay fit, he practices Tai Chi. She does yoga and weight training. They are climbing addicts.
And it really isn't about strength when you climb. It's more about technique. Ready?
Got me.
And then I'll take the rope out and take our quick draws back. I got you. Lowering, Chad.
Climbs are rated numerically. The higher the number, the least amount of foot and hand holds, like this one.
Blaze off. You're welcome. Good climb.
Always fun.
Linda's turn now.
On belay.
Shoes on?
Shoes are on.
Belay's on.
All righty. Now my nose is working. All right. Climbing.
Climb on.
As Linda ascends the sheer rock face, she removes Chad's quick draws and occasionally dips her fingers into a chalk bag dangling off her belt, which provides traction.
Easier said than done. And there's that wonderful, luscious hold.
Nothing better than locating a nice chunk or crag to bolster the ascent. Chad's been climbing for 25 years, and Linda took up this sport when they met. These two have alpine climbed in Colorado at 11,000 feet above the tree line, in New Mexico, and also in Oklahoma at Wichita National Wildlife Refuge, which features a voluptuous rough granite.
Chad?
Yep.
I'm in direct.
Okay.
Give me a minute here. A little slack, please.
Linda makes her way to the top, then dangles for a bit and relaxes as Chad securely belays her down the rock face.
All right, Chad, got me?
Got you, Linda.
Lower, lower.
Coming down.
That was fun. And off the lay.
Lays off.
Thank you. That was fun. Didn't forget anything. That's a good thing.
This climb's rated 5'8", only for the seasoned. Chad pulls the rope free of the top anchor, and it drops heavily to the ground. They tackle another route, this one even harder because it begins with an overhang. Chad reaches his fingertips to a ledge, then kicks up his feet high enough for a foothold. Somehow he manages to lift himself to the first anchor and clips on. Handholds, by the way, have weird terms. Jugs, chicken heads, knobs, cracks, flake. That's a flat protrusion. In recent years, the couples have competed in 24 hours of Horseshoe Hell here at Horseshoe Canyon, held every September.
And what it is a competition where all the climbers in four different classes now climb for 24 hours nonstop. You have to do at least one route an hour to qualify for having climbed the competition, and you get an award just for completing it. And then the whole competition is based on points and how many routes you do. And they have four classes. They have recreational, which is the easiest class. And then intermediate is not anything from 5.1 to 10D.
Yeah.
And then the advanced is anything on the ranch. And then the elite is the fourth class. And those are our professional climbers that show up for a competition just to do it for fun. And that way they don't have to compete for prizes and things like that. So they developed that so that those folks could still come. And we had quite a few last year. It was really fun.
They won $1,000 worth of gear last year to add to their fat collection. Linda says they are total gearheads. At home in Eureka Springs, they have a room dedicated just to climbing gear. They're also newlyweds, by the way. This is where Chad proposed to Linda.
I got the ring and hung it up at her favorite route where we climbed down here. About five...
during competition.
Five so in the afternoon during the competition. Knew she wouldn't expect anything so public. That's also the, like, real busy area. So I climbed there out first, left the ring at the top.
It did take me totally by surprise. We had two friends.
Did you fall off the cliff? I mean,
no, I didn't. I didn't even notice. I mean, I thought, oh, carabiner. I didn't see the ring on it. He says, do you notice that ring up there? Like, you know, hello, Linda. And I got it. And then he said, will you marry me in front of all these people? And everybody turns around. You know, they're all climbing. And I'm crying. Yes, yes. Let me down. Let me down. Not because I was scared, but because I was overwhelmed. And to this day, people will recognize us and say, "Oh, aren't you the guys that got married on the rock or something like that?" And it's been precious.
Chad's a public school music teacher, pianist, and composer. She's a licensed massage therapist. Linda's turn to tackle the overhang.
Which is... but I need to get this foot up. Oh, my arms. My God. How do these guys do it?
There you go.
Oh, sort of?
Yep.
Okay.
Step up.
Yeah. Now there's nothing, right?
Reach up high left. Yeah.
Okay. With Chad's coaching, Linda conquers the climb, makes it to the top. Then he belays her down the rock face. It's time for a break, finally.
Best meditation I have ever experienced because it makes me think of nothing but what I'm doing. I have to empty my brain to pay attention to what I'm doing. And when I'm done, I feel so refreshed. It's like taking a vacation in just a matter of 6 hours we climb or whatever. It's just awesome. I love it. Even on a bad day, I love it.
How do you know when you're done? When you just you're done climbing for the day.
The hands will just quit. They won't hang on anymore.
Yep.
Lock themselves in this little semi curved claw shape that doesn't do any good and off you go. That's it.
It won't hold you.
The competition,
drink at the
you
end
can hear
of the day.
It's never in question. But the competition there you can hear it throughout the day from about mid afternoon to midnight. I'm done. It's just a declaration. I'm done. Off they go. Nobody argues. Day's over.
Chad and Linda Martin teaching us the sport and art of rock climbing at Horseshoe Canyon Ranch, west of Jasper, Arkansas. For Ozarks Rock at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
That was from our All Newton County show that we ran earlier this year. Everything we're doing this week, kind of going back and talking about some of our favorite shows that we produced this year. Katie Hendrickson, our newest member of the Ozarks at Large team. You, before you came here, had talked to many musicians. Now you get to put their voices, we get to hear their voices as well.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And so when I first joined on, I was looking at the Fort Smith Symphony program, and I saw that Cherished Ladies were coming to play with the Fort Smith Symphony. And they're a really legendary traditional Irish music group that's been around for over 20 years. And so I was like, well, I'm going to see if I can interview Joni Madden, who's been the band leader. And it happened, and she was just amazing to talk to because she has such a long history with traditional Irish music. Her dad was a legendary Irish musician as well.
So let's listen to your conversation with Cherish, or one of the ladies from
Joni
Cherish,
Madden, yes.
Joni Madden.
Irish group Cherish the Ladies performs in Arkansas. Tomorrow night, they will be playing with the Fort Smith Symphony. Joni Madden, their founder and leader for over 25 years, spoke to me over the phone just after she had arrived into Tulsa. Even though she had a cold and had been up really late, she spoke with enthusiasm about the upcoming show and for the music which she plays.
The gig is almost sold out. I know there's a few tickets left, but that's great to see, especially in these hard economic times, that people are still coming out and supporting the symphony. And that says a lot to me about the town and about what they think that the symphony is that good that, you know, most of the shows sell out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're looking forward to it. I have my six-piece band. I'm playing the flutes and the penny whistles, and Mary Coogan's on guitar. Grania Murphy's playing fiddle. She's from Boston. Morella Murray, world champion on the accordion. Kathleen Boyle from Scotland on the piano. And Deirdre Connolly singing lead vocals and Balron. And then we don't stop there with just the music and the singing. Again, the dancing is a huge part of what we do. And we have Kara Butler and John Pulaski, who have been touring the last 20 years with the Chieftains. And we have Michael Holland, the current All-Ireland champion step dancer, and Dan Stacey, four times Canadian step dancing champion. So we have four dancers, six musicians, and we plan on taking the house down.
Their symphony performances all began when the Boston Pops called them up. It went so well that they've now played with symphonies across the country.
Well, you know, we always like to feature the symphony, you know, because our half will be totally, you know, featuring us. And I always think it's lovely to get the orchestra a chance. They pick some beautiful music. I mean, the theme of Far Away was the Tom Cruise movie, the Ron Howard movie that was based on Ireland.
Uh-huh.
And there's some beautiful music scores written there. And it's beautiful and fantastic. And then I come out and join the symphony with a number on my penny whistle. And I go out there with my little penny whistle, Katie, and I got to tell you, it just never fails to put the hair stand in the back of my neck when I hear that orchestra come in behind me. As a folk musician, it's just incredible to get the opportunity to perform world-class musicians of that caliber and have the Irish traditional music that was music written by people who didn't know what key they were playing in or what note they were playing. They just knew it sounded good. And this music that's now, you know, been risen, you know, having this platform in America to play to so many symphonies. But, you know, I think the secret to our success is that we really, really enjoy ourselves. And why it's been so successful is that the orchestra really enjoys it as well. So when they get into it and we get into it, you know, that's when sparks fly. And we love our show so much. We really enjoy what we do. Like most symphonies, if you check out our website, cherishtheladies.com, and see all the symphonies we've played, then you'll always see an asterisk after it saying how many we've come back to. Usually when we go in once, it goes down so well, we're brought back immediately. So we're hoping the same instance is going to happen as well with Fort Smith, and totally looking forward to our show on Saturday night.
Joni always had music around her. She grew up in a musical household. Her father, Joe Madden, was a legendary Irish accordionist.
You know, I grew up in the Bronx, and you have to forgive me because I have a bit of a cold here. But I grew up in the Bronx, and I was Irish music was a part of every function. You know, Christmas Day was not Christmas Day without my father taking the accordion out, his friends coming over to play the fiddles and the flutes, and a jam session would occur. That was always a part of the christenings, the weddings, you know, the funerals, everything. Every family function, every gathering involved traditional Irish music. To me, it was just completely normal to have it everywhere and for everybody to rip out their instruments at the end of the day. And the cracker, the Irish word, is the word for Irish, is for fun or dancing and singing and making your own fun. And that was always a part of it. And through my father being such a well-known musician and highly respected musician, I got to meet all the greats and really was so lucky. Even though I grew up in the Bronx, some of the best musicians who ever played Irish traditional music lived in New York. So I called them all my friends, and they were all very encouraging and so helpful to us as we were starting out. And the Clancy Brothers was another fantastic band that, you know, we got the chance to tour with. And everybody helped us along the way, which is such a lovely, lovely thing. And now we try to do the same and nurture and help other younger bands coming along.
That interview Katie did with Joni aired earlier this year on Ozarks at Large. We're talking about some of our favorite stories that we did in 2011 this year. Antoinette?
Yes.
This was around Halloween, right, when you went to the Spanish Cave?
Yes, that's where I went.
Right.
It was fantastic.
It's near Gentry?
No.
Garfield.
Gravett.
One of the G's in Benton County.
It's north of Gravett.
Yes.
The old Spanish treasure cave is there year-round, and I've heard about it forever. Again, growing up in this area, always hearing about it. And at Halloween time, they decorate it, and it's all haunted and whatnot. And apparently at Christmas, they do Christmas lights and stuff. But yeah, so one night I went out there, and the owners actually live on the property, and they actually got to take me inside for a little bit, and just they were a very interesting couple to talk to, because one of the owners has actually been around caves his whole life, and his new wife, he has sort of kind of gotten into it with him and that sort of thing. So it was just really cool to finally learn about it. It had a great history behind why it's called a treasure cave.
Just north of Gravett, along Highway 59, the sounds of cars flying by echo through the valley. On Paul and Tracy Lynn Scott's property, it doesn't take long to escape the noise. A few steps off the road, there's a black plastic curtain covering a hole on the side of a hill. After unlocking a metal gate and stepping into the passageway, the world goes quiet inside their cave.
So you're kind of seeing this from, we have a side entrance that we actually take people into.
Okay, so this is the easy, when we do like regular tours, this is actually the entry zone. When we're doing Halloween, this is actually our exit zone, so.
So it's a little different.
The Lynn Scotts are the owners of the old Spanish treasure cave, which becomes the haunted Spanish treasure cavern each year during the Halloween season. Also during the month of October, guests can explore the Trail of Terror, which goes through a portion of the woods on the property. A love of the spooky holiday is one thing the recently married couple shares.
We both love Halloween, and that's one of the things that we really share in common with. I was doing it a long time ago, and it just thought, what a fantastic place. Could you walk into a cave, and you're already underground. So for a lot of people, that's a little bit scary. It's a little unnerving, especially when we add what we add to it.
Paul has more than 35 years of caving experience. He says he wanted to buy a place with a cave, and he's been living at his current home for more than 15 years. The cave itself has an interesting history, which dates back a few centuries.
It was about 350, 400 years ago, the Spanish conquistadors were making their way from Spain up through old Mexico, and they made it as far as Arkansas. On their way, they were robbing and looting the Aztecs and the Mayans, and then when they made it up into the states here, they were raiding Indian settlements. Well, they got up here in a brutal winter storm, and their carts were breaking down, their horses were dying off, and they found this cavern. The unique thing about this cavern is there's actually a chimney that goes all the way up. So they were able to go in there, they were able to cook, you know, and stay alive. And but the last Indian settlement that they robbed, the braves were gone, and it was just all women and children. So when the braves got back, they found their encampment completely destroyed. So they started tracking these Spaniards down. And that's how they caught them, because they saw the smoke rising into the sky from the hill. And we know that all but one, at least one of the Spanish conquistadors survived, because it's documented history. And he went through and hid the treasure and then closed all the openings to the cave and made his way back to old Spain.
How did you find out about the history of the cave?
Well, the documents have actually been found. So the cavern was sealed up and lost until about 1885. And that's when a descendant, an old man from Madrid, Spain, came over and hired some young men to look for a hoof imprint or a horseshoe imprint carved in a bluff. Well, that's when they found that out here. They dug underneath it, removed a huge boulder, and that's when they first rediscovered the cavern back in 1885. And that's when the first treasure hunt took place as well.
Did they ever find the treasure?
No, the treasure has not been found. Lots of artifacts have been found, but the treasure still has eluded us.
Paul Paul explains a lot of past owners bought the cave, thinking they could simply dig around and find the treasure. But they eventually discovered that wasn't the case. He says it's a very complex cave system. It's very maze-like, with passages and tunnels everywhere. So the question is, as the current owners, do Paul and Tracy ever search for the treasure?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. If you had a treasure in your backyard, wouldn't you go search for it?
During the Halloween season, friends and local high school students help run the scary attractions. But the cave does see visitors during other parts of the year. March through September, guests can stop by for regular tours of the cave. In December, the cave is decorated with lights and traditional Christmas scenes. The couple also offer special tours that include spending the night in the cave.
We do have a special program for Boy Scout groups and youth groups, and it's a Camp in the Cave program where we actually take these kids camping inside, teach them about caves, teach them about the proper techniques of caving and the rules, regulations, and the good points and everything about caves. And, of course, they get to go wild caving, and they get to spend the night inside there. So that's a very exciting, very popular program.
Although they do decorate the cave, Paul says it's important to keep it as natural as possible for the sake of the cavern's ecology. Paul says caves are fascinating places, and as you explore them, you will notice different things each time.
Caves, once you step inside, you're completely secluded from the outside world. And it's just a real peaceful, real calming effect. Really the only noise you hear is maybe a little dripping water and sometimes a little wind and whatever noise y'all make. So
it's very beautiful. Like Paul said, our cave is a very mazy cave, so instead of it being a linear cave where you just walk in and keep going, we have three different levels in our cave. We have an entire bottom level, we have a middle level that we take our tours on, and then we have an upper level. And so we've gone caving many a times, and it never ceases to amaze me at the beauty of the cave. So if you can, open your mind, you can see so much. It's so beautiful. It's so peaceful.
Tracy says they do see a number of repeat customers. Frequent visitors are familiar with the couple's dog, Sam. They often bring the large mixed-breed pup his favorite snack, tater tots, from Sonic. Tracy says that unlike Paul, she is new to the world of caving. She says it may sound silly, but when she first entered the cave, it took her breath away, and you just knew you fit.
Yeah, we love it. Like I said, you just kind of walk in and just kind of, I don't know, first time I ever walked in, it was just, it felt like home, very comfortable, very...
Mm-hmm.
One of my biggest things is when I do get kids in here that are so scared of bats... And to see them when they walk out, the joy on their face because they walked in so scared and they left with a big smile on their face, that's just...
It's mostly the fear of the unknown.
Yep.
So when they look at the bats and everything and they find out, oh, these things aren't going to attack us and bite us and we're not going to turn into vampires
or
that fun stuff.
Or big bears are going to run out and chase you and stuff. It's very rewarding because you know that you've changed their thought process on something, so...
Mm-hmm.
The haunted attractions at the Old Spanish Treasure Cave are open through Halloween. Admission is $12 for the cave, $8 for the trail, or $18 for both. The owners say the haunted cave attraction is recommended for those 12 and older because there are no chicken exits. Once you're in the cave, you're in until the end of the attraction. More information is available at Spanish-treasure-cave.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
That story aired around Halloween this year in 2011. I just realized that three of our stories involve couples. Yours climbing.
Oh, yeah.
Spanish Cave and then Sweden Creek.
Oh, yeah.
Couples who have kind of combined their passion.
There you go.
Just noticed that. That was not
planned. That was unintentional.
Speaking of planned, mm-hmm. The University of Arkansas has been planning for growth for a while, and this year there was a lot, and there was a conference, or sort of a meeting.
Mm-hmm. Earlier this fall, Chancellor G. David Gearhart held a press conference, or maybe even a meeting of sorts,
faculty, staff,
kind of briefing them on what the plan is for this huge growth that's happening at the U of A, and how the university plans to deal with this growth. And you know, even if they want to grow or not. So, but here's the thing. I love U of A press conferences. Dr. Gerhardt is always so hilarious. You know, he always starts these press conferences with jokes, and they're just really, they have so much information, and it's so nice to keep up with the university because that's the heart of Fayetteville.
We are here really to talk about two things. Do we have a plan, and do we know what we're doing? There are some days that we do not know what we are doing. I will readily admit that to you. But we think we do, particularly on the growth issue. We are here to hear your concerns and to listen to what you have to say and to try to perhaps answer any issues that you may have.
The unprecedented growth witnessed by the University of Arkansas in the past few years was the main topic of discussion during the fall semester campus faculty meeting. University of Arkansas Chancellor Dr. G. David Gerhardt addressed over 100 U of A faculty members during the meeting that was held yesterday at Giffel's Auditorium in the old main building on the campus. Dr. Gerhardt was joined by Provost Dr. Sharon Gaber and the chair of the campus faculty, Dr. Timothy Kroll.
The question has come up, why are we growing and who said we need to grow?
According to Dr. Gerhardt, the growth of the university or the increase in enrollment was listed as a goal in the TAP report, a document that hopes to provide transparency and accountability to the people of Arkansas. The TAP report was developed in 2009 by the Chancellor's Administrative Policy Council in association with members of the campus community. Dr. Gerhardt said one of the main reasons why the university sought growth was to service the people of Arkansas. The state, except for West Virginia, has the lowest number of citizens with a bachelor's degree. The university hopes to provide increased opportunities to state residents by increasing enrollment. Another benefit of the unprecedented growth was that it helped hold down tuition increases.
If we did not have this income from increased number of students, we'd be in pretty serious shape right now. We have not had an increase in our state appropriation for almost 5 years. That's the general appropriation that we get for our budget, almost 5 years. In addition to that, we've had cutbacks to our budget of several million dollars because of what's been occurring with the economy. So we believe it's important to right-size ourselves, if you will. That's one of the reasons, holding down tuition increases.
Dr. Gerhardt cited the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery as one of the reasons that may have led to the increase in the number of enrolled students at the University of Arkansas. He said the average debt of 50% of the students who have graduated from the university is close to $25,000. The lottery might help alleviate that and provide some relief. The chancellor also said that the University of Arkansas is gradually becoming the institution of first choice for many Arkansans and others beyond the state line. Another reason that led to the increase in numbers, according to him, was the efficiency of the university's enrollment staff. However, Dr. Gerhardt made the careful observation that while the number of students has increased, the university has not compromised the quality of the students being admitted. The chancellor then discussed the elements that need to be in place for accommodating the growth.
Obviously, we've got to hire more faculty. We had a serious problem. We had not increased faculty. And as a matter of fact, there was some feeling that we had increased staff to the detriment of increasing faculty ranks. However, I think we have tried to reverse that trend. We will have added almost 50 new tenure-track faculty after this year. We've also made a commitment to add about 100 non-tenure-track faculty, and our hope is to continue to add faculty in the future. We know it's not enough. All I can say to you that it is a good faith effort on our part to add as many as we think we can afford.
The chancellor said the sources of income for the university are limited.
The tuition and fee is several hundred dollars below what other institutions similar in size charge, and state support has continued to decline over the years. These factors have been critical in determining the university's ability to give raises. Dr. Gerhardt said the university will be giving raises retroactively this year. In addition to increasing the number of faculty members in the university, upgrades and additions to several buildings on campus are also underway, including Hillside Auditorium, Bowl Walker Hall, Ozark Hall, Epley Building, a new fitness center in the Union, and a new technology center also in the Union. The university is also in the process of purchasing the Cato Springs Research Center, the site of research for some engineering departments. Another concern the chancellor addressed was the lack of classrooms and laboratories. He said, although no decisions have been made, the university is considering building a large yet inexpensive facility located on the close perimeter of the campus that might have a number of labs and classrooms.
So the chancellor's laid out really why we have been growing, how we have been growing, and what we've been doing. And part of the question is, okay, so what is the plan? The plan is to grow to 25,000 students, and then look and determine, do we want to continue to grow?
During the meeting, Provost Dr. Sharon Gaber pointed out, the biggest challenge remains figuring out whether the university wants to grow, and if so, what needs to be done to accommodate the growth and not compromise the quality of students or facilities available to them.
We need to look at faculty, staff, classrooms, labs, dorms. We have already begun some spreadsheets looking into this to determine what it is we would need. Assuming we maintain current ratios, and I write here, for example, faculty to student ratios, or assuming current numbers of students consistently would live in the dorms, that sort of thing. We are running all of that information, and what it's clear is it will cost a fair amount of money to be able to maintain the quality we would like to have in place to be able to do it. The other part that Chancellor Gerhardt mentioned is in terms of our students then, what is it we're saying and doing? We know right now that applications are up for next fall. If we don't think about what is it we're going to do to be able to shape the class.
Dr. Gaber said the university is considering defining qualities to be able to shape its freshman class, focusing on diversity and high-ability students from Arkansas and out of state. Chancellor Gerhardt and Provost Gaber also addressed questions from faculty members regarding classroom size issues, the synergy between the university and area community colleges to support students, state higher education policies, the Fulbright College, online classrooms, and the salaries of graduate assistants. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Well, we're almost done with our week of review of our favorite shows of 2011. Thank you, as the person who's been doing the show for a while, thank you so much, everybody. It's so fun to come to work.
It really is, and
I appreciate all the hard work that you've all done this year. As I was listening to the show today, I realized two things. I can be a big wad of anxiety, and many of the stories today had something to do with something that I would consider a phobia for many people. You talked about the snakes, the snake that we ran into at Sweden Creek, climbing heights, right? The Spanish cave. You know what my biggest fear is?
Yeah, you don't like caves.
Because my biggest fear is being buried alive.
Right.
So I'm going to ask, what's the one thing you wouldn't want to have to deal with to do a story that might be a fear or something that you would say, you know what, I'm just not going to deal with that? Anyone have an idea?
I think snakes are probably the only thing for me.
Okay. And I've seen you in action with snakes.
Yeah,
twice. That's right. And she is not kidding.
Twice.
Ithi, do you have anything that would...
Sports?
Sports, okay.
That's because true. I've had you pass on sports stories.
I have, because I've never been a very sporty person. And I know that if I get to doing a story on sports or just anything, if I learn enough or if I research enough, I will be able to do it. But I just I just don't take it. It's not my first option. So,
and Katie, I will take those for you. Yes. Okay.
Katie, Christina, Jacqueline, anything come to
I'd
mind?
I was thinking about sports as
yes.
well.
Really?
I'm not very knowledgeable about sports. I love playing Trivial Pursuit, and I can get all my pie pieces,
but
except
not the orange.
For the sports, and it always drives me crazy.
I don't really have a phobia.
What?
That really is so cool.
That is
our
goal.
I can't think of anything that I'm afraid of. Like, I almost wanted to say birds, because birds kind of scare me. Like, I like
birds
to I like to look at them. But
so,
you have to, like,
so Christina,
but I don't like to be around.
If I came
Christina
to you.
Christina and Tippi Hedren.
Tippi Hedren. If I came to you on January 4th or 5th and said, I have this story about this tarantula pit, you'd be willing to do that?
Do I have to get in the tarantula pit?
That's what
pit?
I'm saying.
Tarantula pit.
Yikes.
Yes, I would do it.
All right. Okay.
I would do it.
They're Jackie? Very soft. I've had tarantula therapy. They're
right?
really
I mean,
soft.
That's what I was thinking.
Tarantula therapy.
I don't think, yeah.
Jackie, anything that would keep you from doing a story or that you would rather?
I think what I love is that we don't have to do if it bleeds, it leads here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Other than
what about
Kyle?
You?
Open water.
Oh, that's fair.
Yes, yes.
I would rather not do something on open water.
That's open fair. Water and being buried alive.
Yeah, there are others. But I would say heights because I don't like heights, but I've ended up doing stories where I had to go.
Yeah.
And I've done some on open water. I don't know. They're probably,
so I just need to get you to cave now and we'll conquer that one.
No.
What happened to you as a child?
I don't know. We'll discuss that in the week of
that's
your next
our all Helms, Ozarks
okay.
at
yeah.
Our
yeah.
Ozarks at Large Edition.
All right. Thank you all. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Oh, but I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing? Arms will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock that night.
From our live coverage of the opening of Crystal Bridges Museum to stories about groundbreaking research at the University of Arkansas, KUAF has kept you informed on the most important events of 2011. The news won't let up in 2012 with the presidential campaign and the uncertain world economy. Please help us bring that news to you. Make a year-end tax-deductible gift at KUAF.com. That's KUAF.com. Click on Contribute Now, and thanks.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Van Buren, Tahlequah, Zinc, your NPR affiliate for the past 27 years and your source for community events. Remember, you can enter your own community event information at our website, KUAF.com. Ithi Agnihotri Madulkar will have a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large on Monday, the 2nd of January. Antoinette, you and I will be back together on the show on
January 3rd,
which is a Tuesday.
It is a Tuesday.
All right. Have a happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Jackpot!